Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. And Daniel, good to see you.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
Today is a day, I don't want to call it a very special day, but it's one that we should remember. It's an anniversary, and I thought we'd spend a little bit of time talking about this anniversary.
Yeah, indeed. It's 100 years ago today that President Wilson addressed a joint session of the Senate and the House requesting a declaration of war against Germany.
And do you assume that at the time, does history show that we were desperately in need of a war, that they were about to attack us?
Well, going along with the Ron Paul theory, you know, he was narrowly elected in 1916 on the slogan, he kept us out of the war. That's what got him elected. And yeah. The first thing he did, of course, was to take us into the war.
You know, they tend to have different positions, you know, on issues in campaigns versus what they do in real life when they're in office. But, you know, Wilson's name comes up, and Judge Napolitano had a good book about, you know, the progressive era and on Woodrow Wilson. But they're called progressives, and it's just like how people destroy words, and liberal is a good word. Yeah. You know, some of our good Austrian economists never wanted to be considered conservative. You know, Mises and Hayek, they wanted to be liberals. But now, you know, it's been destroyed. You really can't use it. And they work on libertarian. Libertarian still, I think, has more credibility. But progressive, I'm thinking of myself personally as progressive because I want the greatest progression and progressiveness in the concept of liberty of anybody. But, you know, progressive rings a bell, and rightfully so, because we had the progressive Woodrow Wilson, who was going to make the world safe for democracy. It turns out that he didn't do a whole lot of good. One of the things he did was he really started, as far as I'm concerned, started an unnecessary war. There was no need for this. But also, which goes unnoticed by many Republicans and certainly by progressives, and that is his attack on civil liberties. I mean, it's horrible what he did. So this whole idea and notion that so many of us have had to a partial degree is, you know, Democrats are good, some of them are on civil liberties. But just think of under Wilson, he passed the Sedition Act, mm-hmm. The Espionage Act, which is a vicious act, still on the books. Guess what? It sort of sat on the books and nobody paid a lot of attention to it because it was so bad.
Yeah.
But it was used by Wilson. But here it is, and we have a current president that, you know, sort of resurrected the Espionage Act and on several occasions have used it to prosecute.
Yeah, Obama did indeed. And, you know, we're sort of inspired by a piece that our good friend Jim Bovard had in USA Today. I think it was yesterday. And he did a play on the old slogan. He said, Woodrow Wilson made democracy unsafe for the world.
Yeah.
You know, and he did a good review of it. But, you know, one of the things that jumped out at me in the article, too, because it reminds me of things we're going through now, this whole propaganda machine. They founded a committee on public information, you know, and it was all about preventing what we call today fake news, you know, and making sure that you have to toe the line. And it reminds you so much of what we're in now. You know, I noticed that Senator Jeanne Shaheen introduced a bill to give the Justice Department more leeway to investigate RT and other channels like that to see if they're, in her words, exploiting our First Amendment.
You know, this is characteristic. When there are wars overseas and when a country's in war, the people are more willing to sacrifice their liberties. And if you consider it a war since 2001, the people have been willing to give up their liberties. And there has been, you know, the passage of the Patriot Act and the FISA courts that have come up. But I want to read what the first act was passed. It was called an Espionage Act in 1917 under Wilson, of course. But then there were, as we were getting ready to go into war, they had amendments to it and made it even worse. But just, I want to read the words in that act. It's still on the book, although it hasn't been routine to be used, but of course they use spying on us and all other kind of sophisticated things to abuse our civil liberties. But this is what the act did. It forbade the use of disloyal, profane, scurrilous, or abusive language about the United States government. Can't talk about the government, its flag, or its armed forces, or that caused others to view the American government or its institutions with contempt. Those convicted under the act generally received sentences of imprisonment of 5 to 20 years. And there were a lot of people convicted. You know, it wasn't like 5 or 10. It was in the hundreds, if not thousands of people. And one of the most famous person arrested was Eugene Debs.
Yeah.
So here we have the progressive, liberal Democrat starting a war, passing these laws, and they arrest him, and they sentence him to prison for 10 years. And his main, it wasn't because of his economic theories that we wouldn't have liked, but it was for, they probably liked that, but it was because he was opposed to the war. So they put him away, and I think it's interesting that his sentence was commuted by Warren Harding, you know, a conservative, bad Republican, you know, as far as the liberals are concerned. His sentence was commuted, but they treated Martin Luther King worse. I happen to be very sympathetic to the theory that Martin Luther King's murder had something to do with him giving a major speech, anti-war speech against Vietnam. It was sort of a break with the administration because he was working close with Johnson to get all the welfare stuff, but he had had it. The war issue was a big issue for him, and therefore he broke with it. And I don't know if anybody has the absolute truth on that, but there's a lot of people who researched it. It makes me very sympathetic to that viewpoint.
And it still goes on today, demonizing people who don't believe the propaganda on Saddam Hussein and Gaddafi and everything. It just goes on and on. But, you know, World War I is important, and we remember the anniversary of Pearl Harbor and all these things. But this, I think, is such an important anniversary, too, because World War I sort of destroyed the old order. It destroyed Europe, and it set the stage for a series of wars that continue to this day in Europe and in the Middle East. It gave way to the rise of Hitler and Mussolini and Lenin. You know, it's sort of all the bad things together, put together, you know, were caused by this war.
And if you want to talk about remaking the Middle East like Bush wanted to do, and that is tinkering with the Middle East, they really reoriented the Middle East with the with the war, and we're suffering the consequences still from that viewpoint. You know, the Versailles Treaty was just disastrous. I don't think there was World War I and World War II. I don't consider those two wars. If you look at that as a sequence, the ushering in of the progressive era, we have Woodrow Wilson starting the wars, and we have the attack on civil liberties, and then all of a sudden, yeah, there was a couple years in there where they weren't killing so many people, but they suffered through a big depression as a consequence of had to finance war through the Federal Reserve, and then you had World War II. It was a continuation of it, and it continued throughout the whole century. And we still don't have order in the Middle East. You know, there was more order under the Ottoman Empire than there was under anything of the American Empire. I don't think we've, even if we admit that we're an empire, it's a lousy empire. And empires are doomed to fail anyway. And I think it should wake up people, and good historians realize this. It was costly, too. You know, in dollars back then, it can't be into trillions like we talk about now of what our policy could have. But over 100,000 military personnel died, and there were 500,000 died from the flu, you know, because of the health problems that happened. So there was health problems, money problems, war problems, civil liberty problems, and people said, oh yeah, it was a good war. It was a war to end all wars. What a bunch of, you know, propaganda.
Yeah. You know, this topic was suggested to me by a journalist friend of mine, Eric D'Amato, saying, what are you doing for your show on Thursday? And he reminded me of the date. But he says we have to revise the popular view of World War I. But he made a point that I think you might find interesting. He said, think of World War I like Vietnam, all the stupidity of getting involved, but the cost that we never stopped paying. 42 years after the fall of Saigon, all is basically fine, you know, in Vietnam. But 100 years after Wilson conned us into World War I, we're still paying.
And we still have chaos. Remember, he said that everybody could have self-determination. Yeah. And they still recite those phrases, but nothing happened. There is one individual that participated in the discussion on that very day 100 years ago. And it's somebody that I admire. It's a woman. And you talk about people, you know, the aggressiveness of the women's movement and all this. It's sort of aggressiveness. But she was a real leader for women's rights. And her name was Jeanette Rankin. And why I admired her was, you know, she did something. You know, when people ask me, what should I do? Do something. Well, she went and got elected to Congress, you know, before the women had a right to vote. So wow. She had enough benefit. I think she was from Montana. And she became a congresswoman from Montana, first woman ever to serve in the Congress. And the neat thing is she voted against the war. I don't remember, she probably wasn't alone, but there weren't very many. And she voted against the war. And of course, the propagandists then worked on her. Boy, they went after her. And she lost the next election. Mm. So she was in for 2 years, and she voted against World War I. Now, the real irony of this is she didn't just forget about the issues. She decided to run for Congress in 1940.
Wow.
And was elected again. And in 1941, she voted against World War II. And I think she lost after that again, too. But looking up her record, maybe she was libertarian. Well, in war, she was a libertarian, but she was also a pacifist. Mm-hmm. And libertarians are very tolerant of pacifists, because that's certainly better than being a militarist and a globalist that want to conquer the world and have empire. But she was a pacifist, and she stood alone. And I just sort of identified with her, because I can imagine how much grief she received over that. But that to me is just so fascinating, that somebody in that span of time voted twice against World War I and World War II. Same war, of course.
You know, I remember listening to some of the members when they were talking with you in private saying, gosh, I'd sure like to vote the way you do, but I just can't do it, you know. And she provides a great example of just do the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, let the consequences fall where they may, and do the right thing.
Her goal was a progressive, legitimate progressive idea about women having the right to vote and the right to run for office. And I think it's, can you imagine the obstacles she overcame to win an election, and women weren't even voting? She didn't have to worry about, wonder how the women were going to vote. The women are all going to vote for me, you know. So that is a real challenge. But no, we should learn. People should learn more about World War I. It was a total disaster. The results were horrible. The way they went to war, about the only thing you can say is the people should have awakened, you know, because they did go and declare the war. But it was also the hype, all the super patriotic songs and things that people thought they were really going on a picnic. Sort of like the way our Civil War was started. They went out to watch the early battles thinking it was going to be a picnic, and look what happened there. And look at where we are today.
Terrible.
So what is the message you'd like to leave with our viewers?
Well, little wars that are sold as packaged as wonderful things can last a very long time.
That's for sure. This one has been going on for a long time. And war is bad because it kills a lot of people, it costs a lot of money, and they never seem to end. Yet I'm still an optimist. I believe that the human soul can change, and that people are more inclined to peace and prosperity than they are for war. It is the contest that we have is political power and the propagandists that convert the people by building great amount of fears that they go along with these wars. But I do not believe that the people really want the wars, so I think there's two things that we have to do, and that is reduce the amount of power that governments have over going to war. For instance, you know, going to war without a declaration, reduce the amount of power that the government has to print money to finance these wars. And there's so many things to do, and let the people be heard and curtail the ability or expose the people who are using just lies and fake news to scare people into supporting war. You know, yesterday we talked about how they're scaring people into war against Assad. You know, Assad is Hitler, and we have to go and bomb more and more. So, and we saw that so clearly with Vietnam, obviously, but with Iraq and Afghanistan, it's all built up fear. So I think we should keep our eye on the ball. We should argue the case for peace and prosperity. And believe me, the world would certainly be a lot better off. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Come back soon.